behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Preds Insiders with Adam Vingan. Smashville lives here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Adam Vingan here with you, Nick Keiser as well. The Predators will be back in action soon enough, Saturday. The Predators resume their schedule at home against the Colorado Avalanche to kick off a four-game homestand. But before we get there, Nick, we have one sort of kind of big hockey game to play. On Thursday in Boston, 7 o'clock, a rematch between Canada and the United States for the Four Nations Face-Off Championship. The United States won the opening contest between these two countries on Saturday night in Montreal, winning 3-1. The U.S. punched its ticket to the final by defeating Canada. Canada needed to defeat Finland in regulation on Monday, which they did. They jumped out to a 2-0 lead within the first 5 minutes. It was 3-0 at the end of the first period. It was 4-0 early in the second period. Kevin Lankinen, who started the Finns' second game and won, was pulled after 25 minutes. He allowed 4 goals on 13 shots. UC Saros, who had a rough game, a rough third period, I should say, against the U.S., comes in relief, stops all 14 shots he faced. Finland made a push at the end of the game. 2 goals by Mikael Granlund. But Sidney Crosby scores in an empty net. Canada wins 5-3 to set up the rematch again. 7 o'clock on Thursday in Boston. We're going to get into the nitty-gritty of that particular matchup, but we'll start with this, Nick. What have you made of this tournament as a whole? I think it has exceeded even my wildest expectations. Compelling hockey throughout, and I think the NHL has something here, but what are your thoughts on this tournament thus far?
I think it's been a fabulous tournament, and it's been shell-shockingly fabulous in my mind as well. They have put on a product that I thought would be more about the all-stars, that, hey, we're going to just represent our countries, we're here to just play some shinny, you know, but it's far from that. This has been a very, very fun tournament so far, and I thought the first game of the tournament set the tone, but look, anytime you get U.S. and Canada going up against each other, that was a lot of fun, and that was the best game in my mind in the last decade, easily, hands down. And, you know, I'm not sure what the ratings are to a T, but I do know that I think it surpassed 4 million a little bit, I want to say.
4.4 million was the average for the game, U.S. and Canada. It peaked at 5.2 million. It averaged 4.4.
There you go. So, hey, you're always good with the numbers. I remember seeing it, just didn't keep it handy on me. So, but that is awesome to see. And as many boomers as there are for, hey, this is not other countries, and we wish that other, you know, teams were part of this, and why didn't this happen in the Olympics? Why wasn't it best on best? Well, look, this is the whole NHL recapturing what they have been missing for a while now. So it's been fun to see these best on best games happen, Adam. I've been very pleased with it. Not necessarily the greatest showcase by the Preds representatives necessarily, but they're all done now. So we'll see how it shakes out on Thursday. But I've been fairly impressed with how they've put on this showcase, Adam.
UC Saros had a solid first 2 periods against the United States last week, but the U.S. piled it on in the third period, scoring 3 goals in the first 3 minutes of the third period. UC Saros played the entire game. Kevin Lankinen started Finland's following game, a 4-3 overtime win against Sweden. He started the game against Canada, was pulled, as I mentioned. UC Saros comes back in. As for the U.S. and Canada rematch, some news broke Tuesday morning. Charlie McAvoy, one of the Americans' top defensemen, will not play in the championship game. He has been ruled out. The The Boston Bruins released a statement saying that he was dealing with an upper body injury and saying that he will not play at his home rink. Of course, the game in TD Garden. One player that was missing for Canada in the first matchup was Cale Makar. He was sick, but he did return against the Finns, so he's expected to play. So an advantage that the U.S. had in the first game, they are not going to have in the second game. There are some injuries piling up for the Americans because the game on Monday did not mean anything for the U.S. in terms of the standings. Matthew Tkachuk did not play. Austin Matthews did not play. Charlie McAvoy also did not play. But the expectation is that Tkachuk and Matthews should be available. Matthew Tkachuk, that is. Brady Tkachuk did play on Monday, was banged up, was held out of the remainder of the game for precautionary reasons. U.S. coach Mike Sullivan said that he does not anticipate it being an issue. But we saw how pivotal, there I go. I don't know why I couldn't get
words
that
hard,
out.
Man.
Yes,
words are hard.
How pivotal the Tkachuks were in the game against Canada the first time around. So if they are not up at full strength this time around, that is also a big advantage for the Canadians on Thursday.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. And I don't think we'll see three fights in 9 seconds of game time necessarily this time, Adam, although that would be riveting and that would be pay-per-view quality. So, but I think watching Brady the other night, you know, drive the net, I was hoping that would not lead to an injury. You know, that looked like a play he could very easily seriously injure himself as well had he landed the wrong way. So it's going to be a fun matchup. I'm really excited to see what the energy level is out of the gates, especially with the goaltending matchup as well. I know Connor Hellebuck, you know, got a night off and whatnot. And then also Jordan Binnington, you know, he's been playing and I don't know. And you said this not that long ago, especially on this show, that their goaltending is their weakness. And I don't know if they'll go to Aiden Hill, surprisingly. I don't know if that's a smart thing to do, given how cold he is and how he's not played. And I mean, he's practiced, but you know, when you've been playing in the games and you've witnessed, you know, what it's like to field these plays from Team USA, it's, you know, it's an interesting move if they end up doing that or not. I don't think they will, Adam, but I think defensively, Cale Makar was a big, big loss for them. He's such a dynamic guy. We all know what he does when the NHL is underway. I mean, he leads the league with the most goals and points by a D-man this year. So he's going to make a big difference in this next game. And I would only anticipate him being a huge factor on the power play as well, because that was something they struggled at when they played U.S. the first time. So, yeah, we'll see how this one kind of goes and what the narrative will be and how early, you know, the tone is set and if the U.S. can maintain that pace or not. So we'll have to find out.
I'm curious what the ratings for this game will be. As I mentioned, the average was 4.4 million for the game last Saturday. It peaked at 5.2 million. A lot of casual hockey fans talking about that game. The fights certainly helped. That is an entry point for a lot of casual hockey fans. And I know some of you diehard fans out there might not like that. But fighting, as I said, is an easy access point for casual hockey fans to tune into the game. I think the fact that the U.S. won the first matchup will also mean that more people watch this game in the United States. Had those fights happened, but Canada won that game 4-1, I don't know if there would be as much excitement for this game in this country. But I think the fact that the U.S. won will make the casual viewer who missed the first game between these two teams tune in on Thursday. If I'm not mistaken, the game on Thursday is on ESPN versus ABC, which had the game on Saturday. So I'm curious about that aspect. I'm not a huge ratings guy,
sure,
in general, but the numbers for the game on Saturday were incredibly impressive for a non-Stanley Cup final game in this country. So I'm looking forward to the atmosphere. The Americans went into a hostile environment last weekend in Montreal and came out on top. I imagine it will be equally as hostile for the Canadians in Boston on Thursday. So looking forward to that aspect of the game as well.
And more Freebird, you know, because why not? So
I don't love it as a goal song, to be honest with you. I know it fits the
for sure.
the motif yeah. and all of that, but I think they could have picked a different one. I'm not sure what song they could have picked.
One shameless plug I'll give real quick is I got a new podcast, Beyond the Point, and I'll be catching up with Teddy Stiga. So I'm going to try to get to the root of where that kind of came from. I mean, it's very patriotic to have Freebird, right? But I'm going to see what the story is behind that, who picked it, and why they went with it. So, but no, Adam, I'm very excited as well. I had nonchalant hockey fans text me, some of my friends that are living around in Nashville were like, are we going to watch a game on Thursday? You know, it's just, you know, all these watch parties kind of, you know, magically take place after not anticipating this to be anything at all. So if you are interested in hockey whatsoever, and then you have the Olympics next year as well, sometimes at the commercial break, they've been teasing that as well. So very, very excited to see what the reception is, especially on ESPN. And I think, like you said, had US lost, I really don't think the interest would be high in this whatsoever, and especially as it shifted back to Boston as well.
Emily Kaplan, who is the ringside reporter for ESPN, tweeted on Tuesday, quote, while Charlie McAvoy has been ruled out for the Four Nations final, some good news for Team USA on the injury front. I've been reassured both Tkachuk brothers intend on playing Thursday versus Canada. So that would be big as well. But looking forward to the game on Thursday, the rematch for the Four Nations Championship, Canada versus the United States. Puck drop at 7 o'clock on Thursday, 7 o'clock Central. The game at TD Garden in Boston. But coming up next, Nick, this exhilarating tournament has given us a temporary reprieve from the Predator season from hell. But the Predator season resumes this weekend. They still have plenty of games to play. But there is a certain deadline that is approaching. And I have what I would consider my ideal trade deadline for the Nashville Predators. We'll get to that next. Adam Vinge with Nick Kieser. This is Preds Insiders 1025, 1063, The Game. Preds Insiders 1025, 1063, The Game. Adam Vinge, Nick Kieser here with you. As I mentioned in the last segment, the Four Nations face-off final, Thursday night, 7 o'clock puck drop. The Predators are back in action on Saturday against the Colorado Avalanche. That is a 5 o'clock puck drop at Bridgestone Arena. Love a good 5 o'clock puck drop. So Avalanche at Predators Saturday at 5 o'clock. As I said before the break, this exhilarating tournament has given us a temporary reprieve from the Predators' season from hell. But soon we will be snapped back to reality. The NHL trade deadline is right around the corner, March 7th, and Predators GM Barry Trotz is sure to be a popular man between now and then. So I attempted to put together what I would consider an ideal trade deadline, an ideal and realistic trade deadline. So if you're listening to this and you're shouting at your radio, trade UC Saros before his contract starts, that is not realistic. So that is not on this list. Again, it is ideal and realistic. And one thing that we need to keep in mind as we go into this exercise, unlike 2 years ago when the Predators had plenty of desirable players to ship off to contenders like Matthias Ekholm and Mikael Granlund, Nino Niederreiter, Tanner Jeannot, the names rumored to be available this time around probably will not fetch much on the trade market, but the Predators still have moves to make. So, Kieser, if you will, let's start at number one.
Number one.
This is the easiest thing to do. They need to trade Gus Nyquist. That's the first thing they need to do. Gus Nyquist is the quintessential trade deadline pickup. He's a veteran on an expiring contract with plenty of playoff experience. He's been traded twice in his career at the deadline. He went from Detroit to San Jose in 2019. He went from Columbus to Minnesota in 2023. Unfortunately for the Predators, his production has cratered 1 year after he had a career-high 75 points on the top line with Philip Forsberg and Ryan O'Reilly. Gus Nyquist is on pace for 31 points this season, and four of his nine goals have been scored into an empty net. So Gus Nyquist, you're probably selling low on Gus Nyquist, but I do not see a future on this team for Gus Nyquist past this season. So trade him for whatever you can get. If Barry Trotz can get a mid-round draft pick for Gus Nyquist, I would consider that a win.
What is a mid-round pick to you? Like anything from four and down, basically?
I would take a if they get a fourth or better, okay. I would consider that a win.
I would too, yes.
So that's number one. They must trade Gus Nyquist. I don't think that is debatable. If I were Gus Nyquist, I would have a getaway bag packed in my closet because you're probably not going to be a member of this team in a few weeks. So that's number one. Let's get to number two.
Number two.
They also must trade Michael McCarron. That is my second thing they must do. And Nick, as you know, I'm a big stats nerd, and there are stats for everything these days. But general managers still lose their minds over big, meaty men. Enter Michael McCarron, who is 6'6" and 232 pounds. He is one of the league's most physically imposing players. He wins a great deal of his faceoffs. He's more than willing to drop the gloves. His seven fighting majors are tied for third most in the NHL. He signed through next season with a cap hit of $900,000, so McCarron can shore up another team's bottom six at a discount. I thought this was interesting, Nick. Daily Faceoff's Frank Saravalli recently suggested in a story, he was doing matchmaker. He recently suggested that the Oilers trade a second-round pick for Michael McCarron. Trotz would be stupid not to accept that. I'm not sure Michael McCarron is going to fetch you a second-round pick, but if a team were willing to do that, I would drive Michael McCarron to the airport myself.
If they're desperate enough, why not? I mean, that would be phenomenal. So.
I don't think that's realistic.
No.
But I do think that there is a market for Michael McCarron as a fourth-line guy, big-bodied guy, willing to throw his weight around. Those are the types of players GMs go gaga over at the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were the Predators, I would trade Michael McCarron. So number one, trade Gus Nyquist. Number two, trade Michael McCarron. Let's go to number three.
Number three.
I would test the market on Colton Sissons. I'm not saying they should trade Colton Sissons, but I would test the market on Colton Sissons. And it's hard to believe that Sissons is in the midst of his 11th season with the Predators. Only six players in franchise history have appeared in more games than Sissons, who's nearly up to 700 in the regular season alone. He's played 71 playoff games for the Nashville Predators. He's been a part of this organization for a long time. And as difficult as it would be to move on from Sissons from a sentimental standpoint, he has a lot to offer contending teams. He counts less than $3 million against the cap through next season. He's demonstrated that he can play multiple positions up and down the lineup. And of course, as we know here, he has been clutch in the postseason. So I would not give Colton Sissons away. But I would put feelers out there. I would see what teams are willing to pay for Colton Sissons. And if Barry Trotz catches a whiff of a team that loves Colton Sissons, who's willing to pay up for Colton Sissons, I would do it. I am a big Colton Sissons fan, not just as a player, but as a person. Again, it would be difficult to move on from him from a sentimental standpoint. But if they could get someone to take him and someone would be willing to pay up for him, I would seriously consider it. So that's number three. I'm not saying trade Colton Sissons. I'm saying test the market. See what's out there. What do you think about that?
I think it's pretty fair to look at him and go that he's a serviceable player for any other franchise. And, you know, a few teams that come to mind for me that might need a centerman in the playoff, depending on what their, you know, situation is up until, you know, the end of March, April, obviously, when you want to clinch. Maybe Tampa needs a center. I don't know if they really are poised to do that currently. They might be fine at that area. You know, I'm always curious as to what New Jersey is going to be up to as well, Adam. They're always a pretty interesting team, and they're a lot better this year. They were basically the Predators, you know, this year, last year. So that might be something to keep a close eye on. You know, you mentioned McCarron for Edmonton. You know, that could be the same thing for Colton Sissons and maybe an Edmonton Oilers team that needs another guy depth-wise. And so Colton can also, he's very versatile because he can play center and wing. Now, he's more of a centerman, right? But, I mean, you've got a Swiss Army knife with him. Anybody that acquires him, is acquiring pretty much a sure thing, if you ask me. And he's been very dependable. You cannot forget that he was a huge fill-in for Ryan Johansson the year that Nashville, you know, obviously went to the final, beat Anaheim. He had the famous hat trick here in Nashville as well. So he is someone that can become clutch. He's not the same player he was then, but he certainly could become someone that a very big contender, or maybe even a fringe team. You know, maybe it's a team kind of like a Utah that's trying to climb back in, or maybe it could be someone like a Boston that is looking to maybe switch some pieces out. So he's going to be able to go to very, very many teams if they're willing to pay what it is. But what is your cost for him?
That's a good question. I was thinking of comparable players who have been traded recently. And the first player that came to mind for me was Alex Wennberg. The Kraken traded Alex Wennberg to the Rangers last trade deadline for a second-round draft pick and a fourth-round draft pick. Wennberg was a pending unrestricted free agent, if I'm not mistaken. But Seattle also retained 50% of his salary. So I'm wondering if the fact that Sissons is under contract at an incredibly manageable cap hit may be, you know, equal to in some form, retaining 50% of the salary, if you get what I'm saying.
For sure.
If a team were willing to pay something like that, if a team were willing to give up a second and fourth round pick for Colton Sissons, I'm doing it.
Absolutely.
I would seriously consider it. So that's number three. Again, number one, trade Gus Nyquist. Number two, trade Michael McCarron. Number three, test the market on Colton Sissons. And number four.
Number four.
Look for a long-term answer at center. Ryan O'Reilly is getting older. If Colton Sissons sticks around, he's getting older. Tommy Novak is not cut out to be a top six center. You cannot convince me otherwise. I just don't think he had the opportunity. He was unable to take advantage of it. I don't see Tommy Novak as a top six center in the NHL. Fedor Svechkov has shown promise, but it's too soon to tell if he's going to be part of the solution down the middle. So the Predators are armed with three first-round draft picks. They have a highly rated prospect pool, number eight, according to The Athletic. They should use some of those assets to try to acquire a young center who can help point them back in the right direction. The name that gets mentioned a lot is Dylan Cousins from the Buffalo Sabres. He's a hot commodity. He's 24. He's signed until 2030 at $7.1 million per year, and you might hear that number and go, "Ugh." The cap is going up exponentially. His $7.1 million cap hit will represent 7.4% of the cap next season and 6.8% the following season. So the cap hit doesn't scare me off. Now, Dylan Cousins had a career-high 31 goals and 68 points 2 seasons ago. Since then, he has 29 goals and 74 points in 133 games. So he has not matched the production from his career season. There is some buyer beware there. However, there are countless examples of players who thrived after leaving Buffalo, including one on your very own team, Ryan O'Reilly. So if Dylan Cousins is available and on the Predators, I'm going after it. I don't know what it will take, but I'm seriously considering it. Now, there could be other players. Another player who's mentioned a lot, Trevor Zegras of the Anaheim Ducks. I keep him at arm's length. He's been seriously injured these past couple of years. Cousins, if I'm not mistaken, has not been an injury liability like Zegras has been. So I know Zegras has had some incredible seasons early in his career, but I'm not sure I would take the risk with the injuries there. So I would take a good, long, hard look at Cousins. But if the Predators can find a long-term answer at center on the trade market by using some of their assets, three first-round picks, prospects, I would do it. So that's my ideal trade deadline for the Nashville Predators. To recap, number one, trade Gus Nyquist, no questions asked. Number two, trade Michael McCarron. Number three, test the market on Colton Sissons. And number four, look for a long-term answer at center. So the Predators are going to be very popular over these next few weeks with contending teams because the Predators are out of it. So Barry Trotz is going to get a lot of calls. And these are the things that I would do if I were Barry Trotz. that would represent to me an ideal trade deadline. Again, I'm trying to be realistic here. They're not trading Steven Stamkos. They're not trading UC Saros before his new contract starts. They're not trading Brady Shea. Like, they're not, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about things they could actually do. So those are my four. You can let me know what you think. You can tweet at me, at Adam Vingan. Let me know what you think. Coming up next, what should the Predators' priorities be for the remainder of the season? We just went through the deadline, but they still have games to play. So what should the Predators' priorities be for the remainder of the season? We'll get to that next. Adam Vingan with Nick Kieser. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan with Nick Kieser. You'll get your Predators hockey soon enough. The Predators are back in action on Saturday against the Colorado Avalanche at 5 o'clock. It's the start of a four-game homestand. Back-to-back home games. Rarely you see that. Back-to-back home games Saturday against the Avalanche. Sunday against the Devils. A home game against the Panthers on Tuesday, the 25th, and the Jets Thursday, February 27th. So some good teams coming through town over the next week or so. But Nick, the Predators have 28 games left in the season. They have to play them. I know that the playoffs are not going to happen, but the Predators still have to play 28 games. And look, it's been a long time since the Predators were out of it this early into a season. Even the year they missed the playoffs a couple of years ago, I believe they were eliminated from contention after game 80.
So, 81 was when it happened.
Yeah, 80 or 81.
Mm-hmm.
So they still were competitive up until the very end. That's not going to happen this time around. The Predators are 18 points back of the Vancouver Canucks for the final wild card spot in the Western Conference. It's not going to happen. But the Predators still have to play games. So my question is, what should their priorities be over the next 28 games? And I've got a couple. We'll talk goaltending here for a moment. We've talked a lot about goaltending. Quite frankly, I'm tired of talking about goaltending, but it is a hot topic. I believe I've mentioned this on the show before, Nick, but this is what I would do. With the concerns about UC Saros and his performance this season and the amount of games he's played over the past few years, I would try to split the games as much as I can between UC Saros and Justus Onanen. I would still give Saros the majority of the starts, or at least more starts than Onanen. But I would cut down on his starts. I just don't see a purpose of running him ragged when there's nothing to play for. So I still think he should be the starting goaltender, the number one goaltender. I'm not saying bench him and start Onanen the rest of the season. I just think that they should dial back the amount of playing time he has just because you're hopeful he'll bounce back. You don't want to have his fuel tank on empty when there's nothing to play for and you hope that next year he can rebound. So that would be one of the player things that I would do. I would try to cut down on the number of starts that UC Saros makes. Again, they're making 28 starts. I don't know how many back-to-backs they have, maybe 5 or 6. So if there are 28 games, I would start Saros maybe like 18 and have Onanen start 10. Maybe you make it closer to 50-50, but that's what I would do. I would cut back on the starts for UC Saros as Nick counts how many back-to-backs they have left. Three?
There are three left, yes.
Oh, I thought that's actually fewer than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing that I would do. The most important thing I think that the Predators need to do, Nick, is I think Andrew Burnett needs to use this time to experiment in terms of lineups, in terms of younger players coming into the lineup that we might not have seen under normal circumstances, that being them, the Predators being in a playoff race. But I also think he should work on some system things. That's been a hot topic as well. The system. It's like a banned word almost. It should be a banned word.
We need to start using the word philosophy instead.
Yes, the system. He needs to see if there are any tweaks to the system that he can make that help this team play better. Again, this team is not making the playoffs. So it's not about trying to get back in the standings. It's about seeing if there are ways to adapt his philosophy to better fit this roster. And I do think, Nick, that these final 28 games are incredibly important for Andrew Burnett. I think that if he can show some progress, this team looks more cohesive on both ends of the ice. I think it will play well in his favor. Now, again, I said the same exact thing about John Hines a couple of years ago before he ultimately was fired. I thought that John Hines had did a good enough job at the end of that season with all of the injuries, all of the trades that the Predators had made. UC Saros did play incredibly well. That played a big part in it. But I thought that John Hines did a good enough job to at least warrant consideration to keep his job. Ultimately, Barry Trotz decided to hire Andrew Burnett. But I do think that Andrew Burnett has to show progress in terms of this team's process on the ice. I think that if this team continues to struggle, I don't think that will work well in his favor when it comes down to deciding what the Predators do at coach. So I think that's the number one thing that the Predators should prioritize over the final 2 months of the season. Andrew Burnett needs to do some experimentation that he might not normally do to see if he can show Barry Trotz and the higher ups at the Predators that he can make the necessary adjustments to get this team back on track next season.
Yeah, and I think he's obviously got the right people in his corner to do that. You know, he was on the original team and obviously is really well connected with everything. And look, I think that goes back to why I asked him what I did after they played against the Sabres is, you know, how much soul searching is he going to do during this time off? And, you know, I'm going to try to follow up on that in the next few days for sure. But I think it's important that you start seeing that more in the players on the ice and the buy-in as well. And I think it's going to be easier to sell it to the younger guys because obviously they're getting acclimated to the NHL. And quite frankly, it's a lot easier to implement those things to those younger players. And Brunette got to work with those same type of players in New Jersey. And perhaps that's going to be something that he can do here as well. So if they do start trading guys off, you know, and they are bringing those skaters up here to get some more playing time, that would be interesting to see. Obviously, we've witnessed Joachim Kimmel make his debut. Maybe he's back pretty quickly. You might see Ozzie Wiseblatt come back as well. I wouldn't be surprised if they even shake up the defense as well. And, you know, at the time of us talking in the middle of the week, we don't know the status of Jeremy Lazan just yet. Maybe he's back this weekend. I don't know. My gut says he's not going to be ready. They obviously picked up Andreas Englund, but yeah, I think going back to the coaching aspect as well, you know, Andrew Burnett really likes the creativity. And one thing that came to mind for me over the break, Adam, was I remember when Martin St. Louis was hired as the Canadiens coach and people asked him about what he was going to be about systematically and also his philosophy as well. And he had no NHL experience other than playing, right? But for him, it was about the players having fun, doing their own thing on the ice, while also fitting into regroups and breakouts and all of those types of things. I wonder if we'll see something similar from Andrew Burnett and his coaches as well, where he wants it to be more free flow and we have those fast regroups and breakouts and cycles and all of those things. Because if they do that at a quicker rate, if they're moving the puck and they're moving their feet a little bit better, because they've constantly said that in post-game and pre-game interviews or wherever it is, if they're doing that, they might look really different. And if they do that, more goals will fall their way and maybe they hit less posts and perhaps Andrew Burnett will keep his job after all.
It's a good question. And look, when the season ends, there are going to be a lot of people looking at Andrew Burnett. And again, if I'm not mistaken, Nick, you are a producer on the station. You hear a lot of things.
Yes, I do.
I believe I was the first person on this station to advocate for his firing.
That is correct.
I did it after 25 games. Jared joined me shortly thereafter. I'm not sure anybody else has been as staunch about it as I have and Jared has been. But I still feel that way. I'm not sure he's the right coach for this group. I don't think that Andrew Brunette is a bad coach, because bad coaches are not the runner-up for the Jack Adams Award 2 out of 3 years if you're a bad coach. He is not a bad coach. I'm not sure he's the right coach for this group, this older group, this slower group. I'm unconvinced. So if Andrew Brunette can show me otherwise over the final 28 games, maybe I reconsider. But right now, I am not convinced that he is the right coach for this group. And that is nothing against him. Again, he is a good coach. But he may be a better coach for a different team, for a different roster. So I think there is going to be a lot of pressure on Brunette over these next couple of months to show that he is indeed the right coach for this group. So I will be watching that very closely. Again, player-wise, I think that UC Saros's workload should be lessened just because the Predators don't have anything to play for in the standings. Quickly, my question to you, Nick, is we've seen Fedor Svechkov and Joachim Kemmel and Zachary LaRue. If other younger players come up, who should we see next?
That's a good question. One name I've wondered is Tanner Mullendijk. Could we see him after he finishes his junior season? Spoke with him not that long ago, and he told me he's not thought about it, which I don't expect him to think about making his debut after playing in the middle of his season. But he's with Medicine Hat, and that might be something that we see. You know, could Andrew Gibson be another guy as well that Nashville goes to potentially? More or less, I think my gut says those guys might go more so to Milwaukee, and then they might bring up someone like Kevin Gravel or Jake Livingstone just for the time being. But, you know, that's not unreasonable to think something like that as well. But if you also look a little bit further as well, I already mentioned Joachim Kemmel, mentioned Ozzie Weisblatt as well. Those are two names that are obvious to me. If they continue to make some trades, I could very easily see more guys with experience get called up. Wouldn't it be cool if, this doesn't make too much sense, but maybe it happens. Kyle O'Reilly's going to retire. Why not play with his brother one more game or something like that? You might see some pretty crazy things. You know, they also have Kiefer Bellows they called up, and they didn't play him, but he could certainly play in the NHL. You know, Jake Lucchini has done very well this year down there as well. I've kept track of them relatively well, Adam. So we could certainly see some guys get called up. I know that Reed Schaefer's had a down year. I would not expect him to be called up just because of his health. But that's really it. I wouldn't anticipate anything else to really happen. I don't think Mark Del Geiso gets called up. I mean, we've seen him around, but I don't think that's going to happen. Spencer Stastny could be another name as well. So they've got the depth, but it's a matter of what they do with that if after the trade deadline, and if those assets need to be called up, then they certainly could be. So, but yeah, that's probably what you'll see.
Coming up next, we'll look ahead to the Four Nations Face-Off Final once again, Canada and the United States on Thursday. Adam Bing and Nick Kieser, this is Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Bing and Nick Kieser here with you. Canada and the U.S. in the Four Nations Face-Off Final Thursday. Puck drop at 7. The Predators are back in action Saturday against the Avalanche at home at 5 o'clock. First of back-to-back home games, the New Jersey Devils come to town on Sunday. So the Predators will be back in action soon enough. But here's the question that I have for you, Nick, as it relates to this game between Canada and the U.S. Entering the tournament, there was a lot of talk about how the U.S. has caught up to Canada, or is it at least catching up to Canada, in terms of the talent level in this country versus in Canada. There was a time, not too long ago, where the idea that the U.S. could be on even footing or close to even footing with Canada, the idea of that was laughable. But we have seen an explosion of talent in this country. You look at that roster. It's an incredible roster that the U.S. has put together. Probably the most talented collection of players the U.S. has had in an international tournament of any kind. I want to know what it would mean for the U.S. to win this game and win this tournament. What would it mean for hockey in the United States? Again, I think what was great about the game on Saturday, not just the intensity, not just the fights at the beginning, it's the fact that the U.S. won the game. If the U.S. had lost that game, I said this at the beginning of the show, if the U.S. had lost that game, everything else kind of played out the same. There were the fights and everything. People would be talking about the fights. But I don't know if a lot of people would be like, oh, I got to check this out. The U.S. winning, I think, was great for the sport in this country. Because, look, you and I were diehard hockey fans. If you're listening to this show, you are a diehard hockey fan. You were going to watch this game regardless. But I'm curious about the ratings for this game. But I'm also curious about what it means, what it will mean to the U.S. and hockey in this country if the U.S. prevails in Boston on Thursday. What do you think?
Well, I think the implication is, you know, and how old is your son again?
3.5.
So think about, you know, the mothers and fathers that, you know, are trying to get their kids into it. And especially if my wife and I had a young one as well, I think this game is pretty much, it's not the same equivalent, but back in 2010, I know that, you know, Canada won, but Team USA was a very strong team as well. And they've had other strong appearances as well. But in my lifetime, when they have won big games, it's very similar to now where you have multiple people interested. You know, it's more of the friends that play football or basketball or whatever. They're like, oh, hey, are you going to watch the game tonight? And I think the interest is where it's going to lie, is when this game is over, if Team USA wins, obviously more people are going to talk about it. More kids are going to go to school and say, man, did you see that game last night? You know, that will happen. And over, you know, my short career that I had playing up until I was 18, you know, that was something that really reverberated with me results-wise with either the Predators or with Team USA or any big game for that matter. And, you know, somewhat Canada too, because, you know, I love hockey and I'm going to watch the best teams play. So the way that this goes, I think here locally, just for one microcosm of what I'm trying to get to, is if you see a win, I think you'll see more people interested for sure. But I think you'll see more of a younger audience really start to take to the sport more so. And that's a really cool thing to have happen. You've got millions of people talking about it. Millions are going to be watching. And yes, I'm very interested to see what the rating is too, and if it's higher than what it was the first time around as well. So I don't know. My gut kind of says it'll be a little bit lower, Adam, but maybe not. So, but I think that this does reverberate for years and years to come. And things are etched in my brain from over a decade ago, whereas I don't remember some of the things I did yesterday. And this is going to be one of those things that I remember for years and years to come after watching it. So, you know, that's how kids are going to perceive it too. That's how parents are going to perceive it, and fans in general. And I think that's going to do only, you know, greater things for the game of USA hockey. And I did see, I forget where, but there are less and less younger players playing in Canada. There are more growing in the U.S. right now. So that's interesting as well.
I think that the NHL has found something here. It was funny, just you had the game on Saturday. It was the number one thing to watch. At the same time, the NBA was having its All-Star weekend. And this is not to rag on the NBA, because I am a basketball fan. But there were players at the NBA All-Star game who were openly criticizing the NBA All-Star game for how boring it was, or the format, all of those things. So to compare that to what we've seen in this tournament, those of you who were skeptical of this tournament, I imagine, would have said, I don't know if they're going to really try that hard. Are they going to care? That's out the window, man. Like, these players absolutely care. Jared, on his Sirius XM show, praised the NHL for going all in on national pride. And he was right. If there is one way that you can get people invested in something, even if they are not a fan of that sport regularly, it's by being patriotic. And national pride in the NHL, I think, deserves high marks for this concept. I'm glad the players are going back to the Olympics. This is a nice you know, prelude to the Olympics, the rivalries created here, because the teams are going to be, I would say, primarily the same in terms of the makeups of the teams.
Yeah, relatively.
The rivalries, the player rivalries that are going, that started in this tournament are going to carry over to the Olympics, and that's going to make the Olympics even more fascinating to watch. So I think the NHL deserves, you know, a nice little round of applause, nice little golf clap for what they've done here. It's made what usually is an unentertaining all-star game, all-star week, that much better. So kudos to the NHL. I can't wait for Thursday. Keyser, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you for joining me. We will be back next week. The Predators will also be back next week. Start of a 4-game homestand Saturday, 5 o'clock start against the Colorado Avalanche. So enjoy these high-intensity, meaningful games because, quite frankly, we don't have very many of those, if any, to watch for the remainder of the Predator season. For Nick Keyser, this is Adam Bingen. You're listening to Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3 The Game.